In those days. Demythologizing alert. If you are seated beside a musician or a seasoned subscriber to the Boston Symphony, Handel and Haydn Society, Boston Baroque, the Old Post Road, musicians, etc., or, oh, sit down. Did you catch that first part? All right. If you are seated beside a musician, a seasoned subscriber to the Boston Symphony Orchestra, the Handel and Haydn Society, the Boston Baroque, the Old Post musicians, etc., or if you're seated beside someone for whom Christmas is not complete without hearing all six cantatas of Bach's Weihnacht Oratorio, or without a community Messiah sing, if you are seated by such a person, cover their ears. Cover their ears, because I'm here to tell you that none of the biblical narratives of the Nativity of Jesus come with an original cast soundtrack. The angels that appear to the shepherds do not sing their news according to Scripture, they speak it. And if these angels had attempted to sing, there is no reason to believe that musicality was an angel's strong suit. Angels, first and foremost, are messengers of the God who, according to Psalm 29, has a voice that breaks cedar trees, breathes fire, causes oak trees to writhe, the deer to go into labor, and strips the forest bare. Hence, the first words from an angel's mouth are always, "Be not afraid." But I'm getting ahead. It's not Christmas yet. It's the fourth Sunday of Advent. Even so, for the words we will hear Mary speak in the house of her cousin Elizabeth, countless cantatas have been composed. Even though there is no reason to believe that Mary sang, or if she did, no reason to assume that her musicality and pitch were any more perfect than mine. You know I don't chant, right? Quick sidebar. A formidable Bach scholar and conductor, Helmut Rilling, once commented that for all the effort that goes into recreating period music with instruments authentic to the period, what can never be recreated are the ears of the original era. And every biblical interpretation faces the same challenge. So this morning, before we get to sing another beautiful setting of the Magnificat arranged by our own Bruce Brolsma, I'd like to lift up as a palate cleanser for the ear the silences, or at least some of the profound reticences, which deliver agency for magnifying what is in today's very good news. In those days, Mary set out and went with haste to a Judean town in the hill country, where she entered the house of Zechariah. Let's consider all that Mary probably did not say, what she would not have dared to say out loud as she was going out the door of her home. "Bye, Mom. Bye, Dad. I asked Hannah next door to do my chores while I'm visiting Cousin Elizabeth. Not sure when I'll be back. In those days, Mary, unaccompanied, pregnant, a minor, leaves home in search of possibly the one person in whose presence she might find the words to express what she's experienced and how she feels about that. On her way, did she find the hills country of Judea alive with the sound of music? Not likely. In those days, for the last 6 months, in the house of her kinswoman, Elizabeth, silence had a name, Zechariah, her husband. Zechariah, whose tongue wore a parking boot clamped there by a very cranky angel. After Zechariah failed to exhibit enthusiasm at the news that his very aged wife was at long last pregnant. In short, Zechariah did not believe it. So the angel pressed Zechariah's mute button. In those days, Elizabeth, in her sixth month of a pregnancy, 6 months where we could ask, has she dared to actually leave the house very often, even as her belly was bulging? Who would have believed that a child was the cause at her age? What can she say without a husband's word to back her up? So imagine that as she goes through the marketplace, as she approaches, there are conversations that simply stop as people turn and look, and in her wake, whispers. In those days, when finding words to describe one's experience fails. In those days when ears that truly listen are in short supply. In those days when a knock at the door could mean anything, most of which would not be good. In days like that. To illuminate the power of a single greeting in dark times, I'd like to share the story of another Elizabeth. This Elizabeth, who just happens to be godmother to our son, Eric. In those days, when it was winter and Elizabeth was about 6 going on 7, words. Elizabeth, are you ready? Elizabeth's father, Clarence, was a man of few words, a Vermonter and a Swede. Elizabeth, are you ready? That meant, Elizabeth, do you have on your coat? Do you have your boots? Do you have your hat? Do you have your mittens? You're getting in the car, it's time we go now. Elizabeth, are you ready? In those Vermont December days, the snow was deep, the temperature in the teens, and there were no lights along the road, the main road that went up the mountain. Yet Elizabeth sat beside her father in their 1950s station wagon, confident that Clarence knew these mountain roads like the back of his great hand. Finally, after driving for some time, when there would be no hint, no reason to suspect that there was a road, Clarence turned and drove again until that road ended. There at the end, he shut off the engine, leaving Elizabeth in the front seat. Her only job on this journey, the first of what would be many, was to be a witness. Clarence got out of the car in the pitch dark, went to the back of the station wagon, and into his arms took multiple cardboard boxes that were filled with things like flour, sugar, butter, tins of ham, cans of fruit and vegetables, soap, light bulbs, even more important, kerosene for lamps and stoves. In those days, in Elizabeth's earliest memory, in addition to the impenetrable darkness of the woods, what impressed her was the silence. For at first she could hear her father's footsteps, the deep snow crunching under his boots as he walked away from the car. Yet as he went deeper and deeper into the woods, his steps grew faint until she couldn't hear them at all, alone in the dark. But a short time later, the silence was broken. She heard her father's voice calling out the names he knew would be behind the door. Helen? Hurley? You still up? It's Clarence Olson. Next, the sounds that filtered down the mountain to the car were the sounds of a door being unbolted and creaking hinges opening, boots stamping snow off on the threshold. Then deep from within the wood, down the mountain, where there had seemed to be nothing from that side of the hill but darkness, Elizabeth could make out a lamp being lighted, a lamp piercing the darkness, a lamp powerful enough with just one wick to shine all the way down the mountainside. After Clarence made his first delivery, he returned to the car and drove on, drove to another impossibly dark road where there seemed to be no road, to another long walk in the night, and then another greeting. Each time he called a different set of names, or in some cases, only one. And where there had been nothing but silence and darkness, a light shone. Over the course of the long night's drive, with many, many stops, as the back of the station wagon emptied of its cargo, the mountain itself changed. What had been a mountain of impenetrable darkness became a mountain of lights, one greeting at a time. In those days, in these days, today, tomorrow, the power of a greeting. You're not alone. I'm here. I'm here. It may be dark, but I can see you. I can find you. So you are not alone. God's greeting that found an angel, who found Mary, and in Mary finds Elizabeth. The greeting that finds angels, and angels bring the greeting to shepherds, and the shepherds bring the greeting to the stable and beyond. God's greeting. Word made flesh. I'm here. Yes, you are not alone.